Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Good evening, boys and girls. My name is Joshua Bradley Winter, and welcome back to the Birding Life Youth Podcast. Today, I talk to a boy who's passionate about saving his country's wildlife and who has received a letter from David Attenborough himself. Let's have a listen to what Freddie Ems has to say. Hello, Freddie. It's good to have you on the podcast. We've been talking over Instagram for a little while. So yeah, it's good to see your face on my computer screen.
Hi. Yeah, it's good to be here. And thank you for having me.
Yeah, well, to start off, tell us where you're from.
Yeah, absolutely. So my name's Freddie. I'm from a town called Chesham. It's in Buckinghamshire in the UK. So just kind of near London, just west of London.
Okay, oh, so you're not too far from London then.
No, just outside it. Yeah,
just outside. Okay. And how did you get into birding, Freddie? What started your passion for birding and nature?
For me, it comes really from a childhood that I've always spent kind of outdoors a lot of the time. I live in what's called the Chilterns area of outstanding natural beauty, and it's kind of been having dogs as well has forced me to kind of go outside a lot. I spent a lot of my childhood outside and kind of just spending it outside in nature, and I think it's that experience of being outside in nature that's really kind of sparked my love that has then kind of developed into a passion over the course of my life and over the course of kind of various initiatives that I've got involved in. But I think there's a quotation by David Attenborough who says kind of no one will protect what they've never loved and no one will love what they've never experienced. And I think that's very true. And I've been very lucky to kind of experience nature throughout my childhood and throughout all my life, really. And so kind of from that, it's turned to wanting to kind of protect it and get involved with lots of different kind of organizations working to protect birds and nature, because that's something I'm incredibly passionate about.
Yeah, it's incredible. You're probably the most passionate person about saving nature that I've personally met. Mm-hmm. In South Africa, we don't really have, like, you know, a lot of us love nature, but there doesn't feel like there's a passion for saving it. Well, you know, we want to save it, but not this intense passion like you and other people in the UK have. But I think that stems from we've got a lot more nature left than you.
I think that's a very important thing. I think the fact that we have such a kind of fragmentation of nature here in the UK, like where there's so much has been kind of destroyed over the centuries, the fact that that has really led to us having a massive disconnection from nature. I think we talk a lot, even with young people, often have a big kind of this disconnect with nature. That's something that with the organizations that I'm with, we're working really hard to try and combat, because there are those passionate individuals all around the country that do care, and I'm lucky enough to be connected with quite a few of them. As you say, we're working hard to kind of spread that passion and get other young people involved in protecting nature, because ultimately that's what we need if we're going to be able to save it, to save like go against the biodiversity and the climate crises that are really threatening our society.
Yeah, it's great. And so you were telling me you're part of the Royal Society for the Protection of Birds, right?
Yeah.
RSPB.
Yeah, a bit of a mouthful. But yeah, so I'm part of their youth. we're essentially a group of young people from all over the UK who you've come together, and we're essentially wanting to kind of provide advice and influence the RSPB's work, kind of their campaignings, their policy, their strategy. That's kind of one prong of what we do, but we also kind of do a lot of kind of campaigns and projects and that kind of thing to kind of increase youth engagement within the sector, within the conservation sector, and with the RSPB more specifically. So yeah, kind of looking to get more young people involved in projects that can have a positive impact on nature. This idea of having an influence on the RSPB as well, it's really important, I think, for many organisations, many nature organisations, to have that youth voice within their organisations. And as we see it more and more over here, we've got more and more organisations, thankfully, kind of forming these youth councils and these youth committees to kind of get a youth voice in their in their decision making. And so it's brilliant that we have this starting to take off. I suppose where it needs to go further is that I think young people need to be a really integral part of kind of decision-making process all around kind of various aspects of the nature and climate crises, because ultimately it's going to be our future, and we really need to have that seat at the table and to be able to kind of get our voices heard in the decision-making.
Yeah, it's really great to include the youth, because I think, I don't want to say old people, but people older than us, they sometimes get stuck on these ideas of this is how we're going to do this and we're not going to take any other perspectives. But by bringing in the youth, I believe it brings a whole new perspective on things, and you've got a new, you guys come up with other ideas to help save nature and that. But speaking of the youth, what events have you been a part of with the RSPB that promotes nature to the youth?
Yeah, so I've been on the Youth Council for about a year and a half now, and we've had the opportunity to kind of be involved in lots of really exciting projects. And one of the big things that we've done recently, it was just last weekend, was the organisation of a massive Youth in Nature Summit. So this was a kind of big national event. We held it in Cambridge in the UK, and it was a really kind of brilliant weekend that we've been working on for about just nearly a year now. And it essentially was a two-day event that brought together young people and conservation leaders from all across the country to kind of come together, create kind of connections and collaboration, and hold kind of conversations with the help of some of our really fantastic speakers from all different areas of conservation, who ran kind of talks and workshops to try and inspire kind of young people and leaders to get talking and get connecting, kind of empowering and inspiring people to make change, really, because we know that we need greater collaboration in the conservation sector. That's something that's really important. We need collaboration between the generations, because as you say, young people bring this kind of new fresh perspective, and then the older people have the experience, and they have the kind of technical knowledge and that kind of thing. So we really need a kind of coming together of all of these different groups of people if we want to kind of make change for nature and for the wildlife that's so very threatened, like, all over the world, really.
Yeah, and speaking of climate change and that, how bad do you think climate change is? Do you think, I think they used to say by 2030, if we hadn't sorted it out, the world would be in a catastrophic state. Is it that bad, or is that a bit of a overreach? Is it still bad, but not on that level, or is it a lot better than we actually think?
I think it's actually a lot worse than a lot of us think, sadly, because I think a lot of us fall prey to kind of media representation that often really kind of dulls it down. I think the climate crisis is called a crisis for a reason. It's the fact that it's going to affect all of us all over the world within. So I mean, I'm not someone who knows the exact kind of the science and all of the exact kind of statistics, but it's definitely going to affect all of us all over the world within our lifetimes, definitely. We're already seeing the effects of it all over the world. We're seeing increased numbers of wildfires and droughts and things like this, which are kind of leading to conflict all over the world as well. So it's for anybody who denies climate change, and sadly there are still some who do deny it, it's impossible to see it's impossible to ignore, I suppose, the evidence, because there is absolutely so much evidence that's happening right now that is, it is really showing how much of an impact it's having on our society already. So if you think kind of how bad it is at the moment in certain places, we've got kind of islands that are being flooded and that are being kind of completely drowned out, especially some of the lower lying islands. If you think how much worse that's going to be in 10 years time, 20 years time, it absolutely is a massive issue, and something that should really be incredibly worrying to all of us. There's not a person on this planet who's really going to escape the effects of climate change. It's an incredibly intersectional issue. It's something that's going to have a massive effect on all of us.
Yeah, it's an unfortunate thing. And what I've always found with climate change is, from what I see, the media always blames it on the public, whereas in my opinion, or what I've seen, is that it's these big companies with factories that are actually producing most of the pollution in the atmosphere and that. So I think the perspective on it of it in the media needs to change. They need to stop blaming the public and start going after these bigger companies, because if I turn my lights off tonight to save, well, obviously I'll turn them off, I don't sleep with my lights on, but if I turn my laptop charger off at the wall tonight, I'm not really going to make much of a difference. But if these big companies with their big factories find ways to stop pumping out pollution into the air and into the rivers, and that, I think we could come to a solution much faster than that. That's my perspective. I think the media needs to change the way they view it a little bit. But yeah, that's just what we see in South Africa. I don't know what it's like in England. Yeah.
No, I completely agree. I think obviously, if we get kind of like everyone, if we get a massive range of people kind of taking these little actions to reduce their own carbon footprint, obviously that is going to, it is going to have a difference. And the main difference it's going to have really is kind of the collective kind of sense of inspiration. And if we're all working together, then we can solve it. But obviously, as you say, where the action really needs to come from is from these big companies who are having kind of catastrophically polluting effects on the entirety of the planet. And so, yeah, of course, it is these big businesses that really need to step up and do something, because there is only so much that, as you say, we as individuals can do. But having said that, when we do come together, we can kind of create some incredible change. We can force companies and governments to change things. We've seen it throughout history and various movements throughout history. So we absolutely can change something. But we need to force these big companies to make the changes themselves, because that's where the big impact is going to come in.
Yeah, and for a country like England, it's, I think, incredibly important, because obviously you guys don't have much, or you don't have many wild spaces left, and you want to hold on to those for as long as possible, because they are incredibly important and crucial for the future of your country. And yeah. Yeah, and one thing, well, the other day in South Africa, Wild Owls, the TV show, came on to Amazon Prime, that's it. And before I had, so I only managed to get around to watching the first episode, but before I had watched Wild Owls, the most exposure I had to the English countryside was in Jeremy Clarkson's Farm Show, which,
yes,
it shows a little bit of nature, but not too much. But Wild Owls really opened my eyes to the great diversity that England and the rest of the UK has when it comes to wildlife. And it turns out you had something to do with the show, so tell us how you were involved.
I mean, first of all, I absolutely agree. Wild Owls was an absolutely incredible series that really showed despite the fact that we are in the UK, we say we're one of the most nature depleted countries on Earth, we do still have an amazing range of biodiversity that really needs our protection. I was really happy through my role with the RSPB's Youth Council to be able to kind of play a role in the kind of campaigning going on linked to the Wild Owls series. So the Wild Owls was co-produced by the RSPB and by WWF UK as well. And so kind of off the back of that, a lot of nature charities across the UK launched a campaign called Save Our Wild Owls to kind of encourage people to take up the mantle of the kind of watching the inspirational wildlife on our screens and kind of showing us how threatened it is all across the UK, and kind of trying to inspire us to take up that the messages of hope that are kind of interspersed throughout the series, and to kind of make a difference towards wildlife, to help to protect it. So kind of the youth strand of that project was called Young Voices for Nature, which was a really kind of fantastic project that I was involved in. I was on the youth steering group of this project, and it was essentially brought together young people, hundreds of young people from all over the UK, to learn about kind of filmmaking and storytelling, and how to really kind of express themselves through the power of kind of filmmaking. And as a result of that, it culminated in the production of an entirely youth led film that was linked to this campaign, linked to the Wild Owls campaign. And it was an amazing project to be part of. I got to meet so many young people from across the UK and kind of all work together to make some amazing change. I was telling you earlier, we got to meet for the first time in person last weekend, at the Youth in Nature Summit, and it was amazing to kind of celebrate all of our hard work in person. We've done kind of film screenings of the film all across the country to try and get it to as many people as possible, to kind of spread the message. But kind of coming together in person and celebrating all of our hard work, it was amazing, because it's been a big collective effort all over kind of the past year or so. And as I say, an amazing thing to be involved with.
Yeah, it must have been incredible. And my favorite scene from the first episode is when David Attenborough goes and lies down next to the puffins. And yes. I had never realized how small puffins actually are. I thought they were like the size of our penguins we have here in Africa, the African penguin. But they're not, they're like off the size, and they looked so cute.
Yeah.
And them going down into their burrows, running away from the gulls. Yeah, that was really cool to see.
I know. No, I would love to go and see them myself. There's amazing colonies on islands like Skomer Island, which is where they filmed that. It's a place I'd really love to go. It's definitely on my bucket list. That's it'd be so amazing to just lie down with the puffins, and that'd be very cool.
They seem like such accepting birds, and not too afraid of humans. But one of my other favorite scenes was, well, I've got two others. With the killer whales, the orcas, yes. For people who listen to this podcast regularly will know I go on and on about the two orcas in South Africa. They keep killing the sharks, port and starboard. They've got a soft spot in my heart for some reason, even though they are probably the world's most dangerous animal.
I think they can often be very demonized, though, I think, but in fact they're incredible creatures, and ones that really deserve a lot more of our respect, really.
And the other scene that really captivated me was the mice in the tree, and how the mom has to go out at night and find food while she tries not to get eaten by the owl. And then as she walks back into the nest, the owl comes down and he just misses her. And it was quite interesting to see that I think they said they can sit still for something like 8 hours.
Yeah,
it was like, I didn't know that about mice. Who thought mice could be so interesting? But yeah, it really shows that England has a lot to offer. Well, not just England, the UK has a lot to offer, and
it does.
It should be protected.
And it shows us to look at look closer at the little kind of everyday species that we take for granted as well, as you're saying. And you didn't know, and I didn't know either, that mice had those kind of interesting, quirky characteristics. But it was a fantastic series. It was the first series that David Attenborough had ever did that actually focuses on UK wildlife. Usually he goes abroad all over the world to kind of film incredible exotic wildlife, which is amazing. But the fact that they filmed Wild Isles at home in the UK really made it, in my view, one of his most monumental landmark series, because it really brought the spectacle of our UK wildlife to people at home, kind of on that incredible kind of level, like cinematographically and all of that. But it really, really made us appreciate the wildlife that we have on our doorsteps. And I think that's really one of the key steps to inspiring us to protect it. So it was a fantastic, fantastic thing. Yeah.
And moving away from wild owls for a little bit, you've been involved with a lot of protests, protesting for nature and the wild. What were those protests about? And yeah, tell us a bit about them.
So I was involved with one big protest in April last year. That was run by, it was good because it was a kind of a collaboration between a few different kind of organizations. It was called The Big One, and it was a really kind of inspiring protest to be part of. That was actually the first kind of and the only major kind of protest I've taken part in since, like, kind of ever really. And but it was a fantastic first one to go to, because I mean it was the first time I had met lots of the members of the RSPB Youth Council in person, and I got to meet so many kind of passionate, like-minded people who were involved in so many different areas of nature conservation and biodiversity and climate campaigning. And it was a really kind of inspiring atmosphere, because it was a massively intersectional and intergenerational protest, which was kind of in part due to, like, all the range of different organizations that were involved. But kind of you had everything from pensioners campaigning for wildlife to young children, and it was an amazing kind of thing to be able to see these generations coming together, because ultimately that's what we need. As I was saying earlier, we need this collaboration between all the different generations to kind of fight for our future. It was an amazing thing to attend and to be part of, and met so many amazing people.
Yeah, it's brilliant that we can get many generations fighting to save the same thing. In not many other fields or areas of interest can you get all the generations on the planet to fight for the same thing. Yeah. And one of the big things in the UK and England's in the UK. In the UK is rewilding projects. Have you been involved in any of those?
So I haven't been kind of directly involved really, but the organization, the RSPB, are involved with lots of different amazing rewilding projects all across the UK. And I've been lucky enough to kind of contribute to, like, practical conservation both in my local area and kind of in various spaces across the country. So I've had that kind of that ground level impact, which is something I love about practical conservation. But I've also had the opportunity to visit some amazing kind of rewilding projects in the UK. So there's a fantastic kind of project in southern UK, in southern England, called the Knepp Estate. And that's kind of what I think when a lot of us in the UK think of rewilding, that's kind of the flagship project that comes to mind, because it's this incredible estate down in Sussex that is that is kind of, I think it used to be arable farmland, and in the space of kind of 25 years, they've made some incredible changes. They've introduced some amazing species. So you've got kind of white storks is one of their biggest success stories, and you've got lots of species of deer, and you've got what they call the NEP Big Five. I'm not going to be able to remember them all now, but it includes kind of different, it's kind of the, our version of your Big Five that you have over there. But yeah, it's kind of like different species of deer, and you've got kind of Tamworth pigs and ponies as well, and longhorn cattle, and all of these really kind of important species that are important for the kind of the ecology of NEP, and really kind of contribute to making that rewilding project such a fantastic success. So that was a really nice place to visit. I visited that with the RSPB last year. And yeah, it's incredibly inspiring as well. It's inspiring that there are so many projects like this going on all around the country. It's in fact that, you know, all is not lost. There are people doing some incredible work to save wildlife, despite the fact that we are incredibly nature depleted over here. It's definitely going in the right direction, but we need more action, and more action from a much more kind of diverse and wider range of people. That's what I hope we'll move towards in the future.
Yeah, that's great that you guys are rewilding and maintaining these habitats, because while watching wild owls again, I was captivated by two habitats. The one isn't in the show. I saw it on YouTube. Well, it's not in the first episode. Maybe it's in the other episodes, but I haven't watched them yet, so I'm not sure. But the chalk streams that they show, they looked incredible, like a household for massive biodiversity. Tell us a bit about chalk streams.
Yeah, I mean, chalk streams is something that's very close to my heart, especially where I live in the Chilterns. We have so many chalk streams. There's a chalk stream that runs a couple hundred meters away from my house, and we have kind of so many chalk streams all over kind of southern England. We have an incredibly kind of globally vital population of them. I think we have something like 80% of the world's chalk streams here in the UK, and that's an incredibly important statistic. It's something that it shows that here in the UK we have so much to offer, really, on the global scale in terms of wildlife. As you say, they're the most amazing habitats. They kind of play host to such a wide range of species, of all different kind of taxa, and they're incredibly pristine, kind of beautiful habitats, made by the chalk, kind of the underlying chalk layers, the geology of the land, they're in a habitat that's incredibly beautiful, but also incredibly under threat in the UK, which is heartbreaking, considering the fact that we have such a high percentage of the world's chalk streams here. So it was just the other day, actually, that I heard about sewage being dumped yet again, actually, into the chalk stream near where I live, the River Chess, which is heartbreaking, and it happens way too often. These sewage companies dumping raw sewage into the river. They really don't understand the incredible ecological impacts that it's having. It's really hard to believe that they just don't pay enough attention to the impacts that they're having. Of course, they have a reason for needing to dump it in the river, but there are so many kind of other options that they need to consider, I suppose, because it's just not acceptable to be causing this much ecological damage to habitats that are globally vital. We really need to come together to protect them.
Yeah, it's a pity that's happening, because they truly look like incredible habitats. And the other habitat, I was shocked to know that the UK had these. I was scrolling on YouTube one day and I came across a video the UK's rainforests, and I thought, what? This can't be real. So I clicked on the video and watched it, and it turns out you guys have rainforests.
We do, yeah. Yeah, temperate rainforests. Yeah, it's something that I only discovered a few years ago, the fact that we had rainforests in the UK, and I was just astounded as you are, really, because they're not near me. They're kind of in areas of Scotland, in areas of Wales as well, and I think other parts of the country. We have these incredible temperate rainforests that are amazing habitats. They're kind of again, they're incredibly biodiverse. They play host to a wide range of species. And yeah, we're something that we're very lucky to have. I haven't kind of properly visited enough of the temperate rainforests around the UK, but again, that's something I'd really love to go and see more of, because they just look like the most incredible environments.
Yeah, they remind me of like an enchanted forest in a fairy tale,
yeah.
Like
yeah,
something you would see in the Lord of the Rings or the Hobbit or something. Yeah. Yeah, I would love to see them one day. And the oak trees in them, oh, they look amazing. The 600-year-old ones and the 1,000-year-old ones, yeah. Yeah. Well, Freddie, final question. What is in your plans for the future? Do you plan on studying a degree? Do you plan on continuing fighting for the survival of nature in the UK? What are your plans?
Well, yeah, absolutely, to continue fighting, because we can't give up now. We need more help. We need action from everyone, and we need so much kind of collaboration and action from all sorts of people. But my personal plans, I'm in my last year of school now, and hoping to go to university at the end of this year, in September, October time. I'm hoping to go and study kind of something more language based. So actually, I'm interested in studying English and French potentially, or just French on its own, because I'm actually really interested in kind of how language plays a role in kind of how we communicate with others about nature and the climate crisis, and how we kind of understand it. Language is kind of something that's incredibly central to our society, and it's central to kind of the entirety of our understanding about nature and the way in which we comprehend the world around us, really. And that's something I'm really interested in looking into more. And yeah, hopefully kind of long term in the future, I'd love to go into conservation or something like that as a job, kind of maybe like using my passion for language and combining that with my passion for conservation by going into something like communications or campaigning or that kind of thing to try and encourage more people to recognize the amazing beauty that we have the beauty of nature and to take more action to protect them.
Yeah, sure. That's really interesting. I was expecting you to say, I want to go study ecology or zoology, but yeah. Trying to promote conservation from a different perspective, it's really interesting, and it's something that needs to be done, because we can't just keep having ecologists and zoologists telling the public everything. They need to see it from someone who has a different degree, and they do... They still fight for nature and love nature, but they see it in a bit of a different perspective, purely because of what they've studied at university. So yeah, that's really interesting. I think it makes it more relatable to people, and the power of speech is incredible. If you're a good speaker like you, you can change a lot of people's minds about a lot of things. It's incredibly important, your speaking ability, when you are coming to change something. Anyways, Freddie, thank you for coming on the podcast.
I tell
everyone this, I really hope you come back on the podcast, but I really mean it. You're truly a very interesting person and very inspiring to the youth of the world who love nature. So yeah, thank you for coming, and hopefully we'll see you soon.
Yeah, thank you very much. Hope so. It's been great, really enjoyed it. Thank you.